welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. And brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. My guest this week is 83-year-old Fred Woods. In this, part one of a two-part show, Fred relates what life was like being brought up in the bush and how this led to him devoting his life to the timber industry. Commencing work as a fella at the age of 14, Fred paints a vivid picture of life as a timber worker and relates many wonderful stories and many tragedies. Now, Fred Woods. Fred, I wonder if you could start off by telling us when you were born and where you were born.
I was born in South Yarra, but mother went there. We actually lived at the Northern Timber Mills at Mount Beenig. That was back in 1921, and at the age of 5 weeks, we shifted back there to the mill and lived there.
Do you actually remember that back that far, Fred, or what's your earliest
memory? I can remember incidents in the 1926 fires which hit that area.
Goodness.
A lot of it, though, that I've written has to do with what my parents told me.
Right,
At that time.
Yes.
One incident that I've always had at the back of my mind was when the fires came through, my dad and mother had buckets of water throwing on the paling roof of the mill house those days. And in the middle of that, with smoke and sparks and everything going on, the draft horses from the mill broke loose and came into our yard.
Oh, okay.
And amongst them was a horse that was rather unusual as a draft horse. He was, he could be quite vicious.
And they're big too, aren't they?
And big, and he was with them, chasing them around, biting at them, kicking at them. And my brother, who was 3-year-old, unnoticed, ran across to them and put his arms round the draft horse's leg. And my dad, who was on the roof, yelled out to my stepsister, "God's sake, he's got hold of Prince's leg." The horse, he said, stopped, looked around to see what was there, and gently shifted his leg away
and let
him free, and his sister grabbed him and brought him inside.
This is the horse that created so many problems normally.
Yes. He was a very good working horse, but he was inclined to be pretty fiery.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's just amazing how an animal senses that it was just a little kid.
What did Dad do in those days?
Dad was a horse driver when they snigged logs with horses.
Okay.
To the mill, yeah.
How long was he able to keep doing that for?
He did that there. He did a lot of different jobs in mills. He could also work in the mill as a benchman, or he was drive a winch or anything like that. Most of the logging game. As a ropeman, which I followed him into many years later. From there, after that fire, it upset my mother so much that she didn't want to live there anymore. So Dad shifted us to Richmond.
Did the fire do a lot of damage, did it?
It didn't burn the house down and it didn't burn the mill down, but across some miles from there was Worley's Mill, and I don't know whether you've heard about that, but there was quite a few people burnt to death.
Oh, awful.
Including some children.
Oh, awful.
And they had the job at that time of going across to Worley's and bringing the bodies out, and they were taken to Yarra Junction for,
Was Dad amongst those people that had to retrieve the bodies?
Yes, he and Cole Richardson and quite a few other people that were pretty well known at that time.
That must have been very upsetting for him.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Mum? I assume Mum was, like most women in those days, was looking after the family where Dad was working.
Yes, yes. We lived, as I remember, we started to go to school in Richmond. And then from there, we went to Ormond to live with Dad's sister for a while.
How old were you then? About?
About seven, I suppose.
Right.
And then back to Richmond, and that was the time of the timber workers' strike, 1929.
What was the cause of that?
It was about a reduction in wages that a judge brought in, and they rebelled against it.
And quite rightly.
For some 6 months, he was on strike. And strangely enough, in those days, the attitude to strikers today can be a bit cynical, but in those days, we had marvellous support because the union never had the money to keep us going. But people like Moran and Cato's and the bakery and even Hoyt's Theatre in Bridge Road, Richmond, gave us tickets to sell, you know.
Moran and Cato were the big grocers, weren't they,
yes,
in those days?
Yes, yes. And we had help in that way, but they were out for 6 months.
How many were there in your family?
There was my brother and I and a stepsister older than us, a fair bit, and she had a tragic ending when we went to Melbourne. She got a job at Spencer Street Railway Station, the tea room.
Yeah.
And she was mad on dancing. It was a dance called the Charleston at that time. And
yes.
She had a friend, Nellie Crotty, who asked her to demonstrate some steps. And of all places to do it, they used to cross the rail line to get, you know, to the other side.
Mm.
And there was a loco going past, a steam loco, and they say the steam they put out the side, it hit an electric train coming from the other direction.
Oh.
And she was killed by the train.
How absolutely tragic.
That was in November 26.
So you have many memories of that?
We can remember that she'd gone. It was pretty. It really upset our mother for a long, long time.
Oh, sure, it did. Yes, I don't think it's something she probably really recovered from.
No.
So life must have been very difficult then, with Dad not working.
Yeah, well, that's it. The only thing we had, you know, coming in was what bit of support the union could give them, as well as. As I say, the bakers and
the local,
and they supported us.
Right.
At that time.
Now, you're around 7 years of age. Were you going to school then?
Yes. Oh, yes. I started when I was six and a bit.
Did you enjoy it?
Well, the first day at school, I was left at the gate. And a big boy, I can remember who he was, came over and decided to assert his authority with this stranger, and he gave me a blood nose.
Oh, terrific.
So I had a great start. That was at Richmond Central.
Well, no wonder you remember that one.
Yeah, but I had a good time at that school, and one of my schoolmates at that time was Tom Donnett, who was later an Olympic coach for diving.
Oh, okay.
His father had the Richmond Bath.
Right. Mm. So how long did you stay at school for?
Well, not very long. We went down, as I said, in 26. And in February 31, we went back to the bush.
Right.
We went back by train to Long Warrie, and then from Long Warrie out to where the mill was, which you'd call it, through Labatush and on towards East Beanek. Dyer's Mill was 20 mile out of wooden tram line.
Wooden tram line?
Wooden tram line, yeah.
That's something I didn't even realise we had wooden tram lines.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had lots of wooden tram lines.
How did Mum feel about this, given that she had such a bad experience with the bushfire? Was she happy to go back out to the bush?
She went back to the bush, and then the very next year, 1932, another fire came through, but it went through above us.
Right.
Missed us and went on into Gippsland.
Right.
Yeah.
So, did you go to school when you moved back to Benak?
No.
You were working?
No. I was only nine.
Nine? Oh, nine, that's far too
just
bad.
On 10, anyway, in 31. And then we had no more school after that because we were a long way from Jembrook and there was no...
Okay.
...further to Longwarry, and we never had a vehicle or... There was no road.
No,
there was no train.
No. So what did you do with your time?
We had a marvellous childhood.
I bet you did at 10 years of age in school.
We lived very close to this little creek, well named the Black Snake, because there were a lot of black snakes, but there were also a lot of blackfish.
Right.
And we used to go fishing.
I'll tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
Ah, you know.
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun. Where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun.
But I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition. Gone fishing. By a shady, weighty pool.
Shangri-La. Really-La.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign. Gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog. You're just playing old gone fishing.
Babu, 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 babu.
There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them four bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys, you're bothering me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Bapa, baby, bapa, baby, bapa.
Oh, yeah.
Older voices, living history.
Now, at a very early age, somewhere about 12, we were taught to use a rifle, and we virtually lived on deer, venison.
Is that right?
Yeah, there was an awful lot of deer, and it was a community thing. Between all the people on the mill, when a deer was shot, the men dressed it and cut it up and it was...
Shared around
with everyone.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Mm. Those days.
So your social life was mostly hunting and fishing then, by
that's
the
right. It was, yeah.
Did you have many friends? I mean, there were many kids your age?
There was a family next to us, the Middletons. There was... a boy my age and one younger, my brother Merv's age, and they had a daughter, and we were pretty good mates. they had a tragedy in their life too. Their father was killed in the bush while they were there.
It was a very dangerous life, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was a dangerous life. We all, those days, there was no such thing as compensation.
No, no.
And all the people on the mill chucked in to keep them going, and eventually the boss gave them a little house in the town at Jembrook that he had, and from there they moved on up to into Gippsland.
So this would have been also getting either into or close to the Depression years, wouldn't it?
It was through the Depression years, right. Yeah. In actual fact, the miller only had orders sufficient to keep the show going for 3 days a week, 3 days work Gee. A week. That's how it was.
So it affected everybody.
Yeah. And we can remember people coming through there, walking through there, men looking for work.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Pretty sad.
Ah, I can imagine, yeah. Mm.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
Now, okay, so you had a pretty good childhood because yeah. you didn't have to go to school.
That's
you,
right.
you were free to range, and in those days, the good side of about, of course, was that except for the natural dangers in the bush, you were fairly safe.
Yeah.
So you could
yeah.
go where you liked, I guess.
That's right.
So yeah. what age was it that you were then expected to actually start taking on some responsibilities, if not work?
Work. At 14, I got a job over at a place called Tonnenbuck. It was working for an orchardist. I was there for a fortnight and I left. I was getting a princely wage of 7 and 6 pence a week for 7 days a week.
Gosh.
I will admit that I was fed and at the same time, but it involved picking up apples off the ground, and then, first of all, there was cows to milk in the morning. And then you worked in the orchard during the day. And after tea at night, you went out to the sheds and you packed export apples, polished and
yes,
wrapped them
yes.
and put them into cases. And his wife used to stand behind me telling me how lucky I was.
Oh.
That plenty of boys would be happy to just be there for me. For their food. I took a fortnight of that and it got too much and I left. And he said to me at the time, "You'll never be any good, you'll never hold a job." And I thought, if there's one thing I'll do, I'll prove you wrong about that. And I was never ever sacked. I worked for many people. As a matter of fact, one sawmiller I worked for 3 times. I left and went back. They asked me to come back and I went back.
So you must have been a good worker.
So, yeah, I didn't ever live up to his reputation.
The first bloke.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess the hours must have been long too.
The hours in that job were very long.
Mm.
And in the mill, when I started there, that was in 15 I got a job falling.
Can you explain what that actually is for people who don't have mill experience?
Falling, yeah, it's the first movement in the bush. It's the falling of the timber and the cutting up of the logs to be taken to the mill.
And that training was all done on the job, was it?
That was done on the job, yeah. And I was lucky enough to have a very good... he was a family man. He had about 6 children and he was like a father to me. It was very good.
Right.
And got me off on the right foot, taught me a lot. And also the second chap I've worked with. After he left, I was taken up to fall for a steam winch instead of a horse's steam logging winch. And this chap was a little bit different, but he was also a very good teacher. And it involved pegging the trees to, you know,
no,
get up off the uneven
ground. Oh, I see what you mean, yes.
You put the pegs in and boards
right.
to stand on,
yes.
to work on the tree. And This particular day, he was a fair bit taller than me, and he said, you can put a left-hand peg in there and you can stand right. I said, I can't chop left-handed. Well, he said, you'll never be any use if you can't chop both hands. So that stung me into action, and I chipped away and finally got a peg in left-handed. And as time went on, I became quite proficient at
yes.
that. I could use
yes.
both hands. Until one day I wanted a peg put in a bit higher. I said, Tom, will you put this one in? He said, it's left-handed. I said, yeah. He said, I can't chop left-handed.
What the bugger?
I said, well, what about me? He said, well, there's no need to be as useless as I am.
But was that dangerous work for you?
Yeah, it wasn't so bad. That was the Gembok.
Mm-hmm.
Out the back of Beanak. And it was a green bush, and as such, there were hazards, but nothing nearly as bad as when we went into salvage timber, the dry ash. As they dried off, the limbs became very brittle and very
okay.
dangerous.
Yes.
If I could move on from there a bit, in 1939, when the fires came through, the Forest Commission asked millers to shift in and try and salvage as much of this fire-killed timber as possible before sun cracks ruined it, you know. So we went to Tangle Breen from there. A chap that I was working with, he used to be a horse driver at Dyer's at Gembrook. He went up with us, married man, Ted Rowan, and he went falling with me. For a start, the road had just been put into Tangle Breen and was very loose on the outside, very steep country. Where we worked around this ridge, we were above the road, and apparently this load of timber was coming out, and they're on the outside on the loose part.
Mm-hmm.
Another vehicle was coming, and when he pulled over, his truck capsized over the edge. And he was killed. We raced down, we heard the truck, and another vehicle behind came from behind him, and they jumped out. But he'd been crushed
yeah.
as it rolled in, and the timber was scattered right down to the river. At that stage, coming from New G, this vehicle pulled up, and this chap got out, and he said, what was that? And we said, oh, the chap's just been killed. He says, who was it? I said, Jack Wollstonecraft. Oh, he said, that's our carrier. Is that our timber down there? That was his
thought. Oh, you're kidding. That was his reaction.
That was his reaction. And two of the blokes said to him, I've a bloody good mind, I'll throw you after it.
Yeah, I bet you they did too.
Yeah, and he immediately jumped in his car and went off. But that was a pretty sad sort of an act.
Yes, isn't it?
Shortly after this, the Forest Commission wanted the millers to not just the logs they were using through the mill, but to fall a lot more timber, get it on the ground where it would be preserved.
Oh, okay.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not up in the air with the wind and sun on it. And to do salvage work, and then Ted wanted to do it. He's a married man, naturally he wanted to, you know, do this. And he asked me would I do it with him, but at that stage I discovered dancing and things.
Of course,
and,
you're
you know,
a young man
and,
now, yes.
I said, no, I wouldn't. And he got a chap from the mill to go with him on the weekend, on the Saturday, and the accident happened.
Tune in next week and find out about this accident and learn about other accidents suffered by timber cutters as part of their work as Fred continues his story of his life as a timber worker. In addition, next week we hear from Ted's wife Marg, whose father served in the Queen's Own Hussars and was an aide to the Governor General.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.